The House, please come to order. Will the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may take the roll.
36 present.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, Representatives Zaroff and Schaefer are excused from the call today.
The prayer today is by Father James Cronin at the Cathedral of the Nativity. Will the members please rise for the prayer?
A little plagiarism is in order this morning. Reciting the prayer of St. Francis, not my own. Let us bow our heads and pray. Make me a channel of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me bring your love. Where there is injury, your pardon, Lord. And where there's doubt, true faith in you. Make me a channel of your peace. Where there's despair in life, let me bring hope. Where there is darkness, only light. And where there's sadness, ever joy. O Master, grant that I may never seek so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love with all my soul. Make me a channel of your peace. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in giving to all men that we receive, and in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen.
Will the Chief Clerk please certify as to the correctness of the previous day's journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 23rd day.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 23rd day be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
There is no objection. The journal will stand certified. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the prayer be spread on the journal.
There is no objection. The prayer will be spread on the journal. Are there guests for introduction to the House today? Messages from the Governor.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate accepts the invitation to meet in joint session Thursday, February 7th at 11 a.m. to hear the Honorable Justice Rabinowitz, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
That will be tomorrow, so depending on the length of the session, we may have a short recess before hearing the State of the Judiciary message at 11. Communications.
There's a communication from Thelma Buchholz, Chairman of the House Hess Committee, transmitting the House Hess Interim Committee Report. Copies for other members of the legislature are being distributed.
Report.
Excuse me.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Judiciary has had Senate Bill 104 amended, establishing the Court of Appeals under consideration a second time. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 104 Judiciary and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing do pass, Anderson, Parr, O'Connell, and Malone. Signing do not pass, Barnes, Martin, and Phillips. Signing no recommendation, Brown and Buchholz. Senate Bill 104 amended has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 539, Credited Service of Permanent Part-Time State Employees for Retirement Purposes, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Gardner, Parker, and Fuller. Signing do not pass, Metcalf. Signing no recommendation, Eliason and Martin. House Bill 539 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 577, Supplemental Appropriations for the Operating Expenses of State Government, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 577 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Rogers, Duncan, Smith, Meekins, Schaefer, Guy, Haugen, and Montgomery. House Bill 577 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
I have a citation honoring Doris Southall by Representatives Parr, Brown, Bettisworth, Smith, Randolph, and Rogers. This citation appears on today's calendar. I have a citation in memoriam James H. Zietz, requested by Representative Phillips, Cotton, Halford, and Martin. Citation honoring Alaska's Olympic Nordic skiers by Representatives Cotton, Miller, Duncan, and Senator Coletta. House Joint Resolution 57 by Randolph, Bettisworth, McKinnon, Metcalf, Parker, Rogers, and Gardner, opposing reinstitution of registration for the military draft.
State Affairs.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, in reference of House Bills. Representative Freeman.
May we have a brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Come back to order. We're under introduction, first reading, in reference of House Bills.
House Bill 680 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to youth hostels.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 681 by the State Affairs Committee, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development for the Youth Hostel Revolving Loan Fund and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 682 by Gardner, an act regulating adoption and relinquishment procedures and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary.
House Bill 683 by Duncan, an act relating to fishing vessels used for charter purposes and providing for an effective date.
Resources.
House Bill 684 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act to allow certain investments of the general fund in insured mortgages and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the Chief Clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
Citation honoring Doris Southall by Representatives Parr, Brown, Bettisworth, Smith, Randolph, and Rogers.
Representative Miles.
Mr. Speaker, with the consent of the prime sponsor, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor on the citation.
If there's no objection, Representative Miles will be shown as co-sponsor. Representative Moss. If there's no objection, Representative Moss and Montgomery will also be shown as co-sponsors on the citation. Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the approval of the citation.
If there's no objection, the citation will be adopted unanimously. Completes the calendar for today and brings us to unfinished business. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Parr be excused from the call of the House February 18th.
There's no objection. Representative Parr will be excused on February 18th. The House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that this body approve the report of the Joint Rules Committee concerning the temporary employees' pay schedule. This was distributed earlier this week, and if there are people that don't have copies or need to review it again, I'm sure we can get it for them. But and I'll try to answer any questions anybody has about it.
Are there questions or debate? Representative Montgomery.
I'd ask one question of the representative. Roughly what percent increase does this represent?
Representative Cotton.
Well, the temporary employees haven't had a pay raise for 3 years, and it's my understanding it's a cost of living and commensurate with other state employee raises. I'm not sure what the exact percentage is. It's been sort of erratic over the years. From 1972, is the latest records we have, or the earliest records we have, and it jumps around at a rather irregular rate, so I can't tell you what the exact percentage is over the last year, since they aren't all the same. Some of them we've changed, for instance, the lounge supervisor and the assistant lounge supervisor, we've changed the job classification there. So there isn't an exact percentage increase.
Is there further debate? The question for the House is the motion to adopt the joint rules report. Is there objection? There's no objection. The joint rules report is adopted unanimously. Is there other items unfinished business to come before the House? Announcements of committee meetings. Representative Brown.
Speaker, tomorrow morning the House Commerce Committee will consider House Bill number 604 by Miller by request at 8 a.m. An act reducing the bond required for boat trailer dealers.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a Democratic caucus immediately on adjournment.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House resources at 3 o'clock today on House Bill 531 relating to teachers' oil and gas courses. We won't be taking up H.J.R. 51 as the schedule indicates. If the prime sponsor has a conflict, we'll take that up at a later date.
Representative Rogers.
Free Conference Committee on Unemployment at 2:30 in President Tillian's office.
Representative Meekins.
Finance Committee will meet at 2:30 to take up House Bill number 684, which is the bill to correct a problem that has gotten some publicity of late, that the investments made by the Commissioner of Revenue in mortgages are questionably illegal, and this would rectify that problem.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, at 1:15, the Rules Committee will meet, and it'll only take about 5 minutes if everybody can get there on time, to consider House Resolution 16 relating to the establishment of the House Research Agency.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, as the printed schedule indicates, there'll be no meeting for the State Affairs Committee today, but I wanted to take this opportunity to tell the members what the schedule is on the income tax bills, the various income tax bills that you placed in our committee. Next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, not during the day, but nights, we'll hold evening sessions on and review all of the income tax legislation, including the legislation that the governor has submitted sort of in lieu of income tax legislation. And I don't know what the exact schedule of which bills are going to be which, heard in what sequence yet, but all of the legislation will be considered next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then we'll take about a four-day breather period while the drafting attorneys do whatever we determine that they should be doing, and we'll hold a teleconference hearing, if teleconference is available, a week from Monday night, at 7:30, which for the central area, of course, we'll put it at 4:30, let the public have comments on the legislation if the public wants to. Then beyond that, we'll continue probably on a night meeting schedule until we dispose of the legislation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are all those meetings at 7:30 p.m.?
All those meetings will be at 7:30 p.m., yeah.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Speaker, under announcements, I've got two. One is that there is going to be a Democratic luncheon today at the Capitol Room at the Baranoff Hotel. Senator Katula is the speaker. On another announcement, Mr. Speaker, the Executive Board of the Alaska AFL-CIO and other union leaders from around the state are in town for a two-day meeting. The Juneau Central Labor Council is hosting a reception for those people between 5 and 6 p.m. tonight at the Juneau AFL-CIO building, and all legislators are invited to drop in and see the newly remodeled Juneau AFL-CIO building. So that's between 5 and 6 tonight, and the The AFL-CIO building is located at 2nd and Main next to the Purity Bakery.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 1:30 this afternoon, the HES committee will be hearing from the WAMI program and also consider House Bill 561 GO bonds for capital improvements for education and library facilities.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, during the at ease, the Finance Committee Chairman, Mr. Meekins, made what I think is an excellent suggestion. He suggested that as long as the income tax bills are going to be proposed, I mean, going to be reviewed by both State Affairs and Finance Committees, that we hold joint meetings on that subject, just so, among other things, the people who want to appear won't have to appear twice, and we'll all have the benefit of reading off the same sheet of music. So that being the case, the hearing schedule I mentioned will remain the same, but it'll be not only State Affairs, but it'll also be Finance Committee. But we may change the location. We may look to the courthouse or something else that that has a little bit more room. But the schedule will be the same, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesdays, and then the following Monday on a teleconference basis.
As a State Affairs member, I'm glad we'll have some company. Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary, I meet at 3 this afternoon and again at 7 tonight. Both times a teleconference testimony on the sunset review of the parole board.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, Mr. McKinnon, as the vice chairman is not here, may I inquire of the chair or of another member of council if the legislative council meeting set for today is still on at 1:30?
There is a legislative council meeting at 1:30 today. Subject of the meeting will be interim, among other things, interim reports from all the interim committees and other committees that did interim work, final reports. Are there further announcements? Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Special Committee on Roads and Highways will meet tomorrow morning in the HES Committee Room 112 in the Capitol, and we'll be meeting with Commissioner Ward and Deputy Commissioner on the capital improvement projects and how they dovetail with what we've heard at public hearings this summer.
Special orders. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to make a few remarks on pay and priorities.
Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, a rather remarkable and I believe unprecedented thing has happened in the last few days. And I don't mean that it's without precedent this session or that it's the first happening in the Alaska legislature, but that such a thing, to the very best of my knowledge and research capabilities, has never happened in the many centuries of the existence of legislative assemblies. The minority caucus in this body, barely a third of our membership, has been credited with the ability and authority to control the decisions of this House. I refer, of course, Mr. Speaker, to what appears to have become a fairly popular perception of the fate of the Free Conference Committee report on the pay raise bills. Mr. Speaker, the member of my caucus have asked me to attempt once more to set the record straight. First, this caucus has never told the majority in the House what to do or where to go, despite urgings we may have felt from time to time. Your party, as most members are aware, has 25 votes in this organization. Mine has 14. The name of the game is 21, and any member with 20 fingers and toes and one nose can work that out. Second, our caucus has never objected to pay raises. In fact, a majority of our members voted for the bargaining unit raises twice last year, and most were prepared to do it again. But third, certain forces in the controlling ranks of this legislature saw fit to lump those raises with a lot of non-contracted pay hikes and saw fit to send them to us from a free conference committee with only the opportunity to vote them all up or all down. Finally, our caucus has never gone on record as opposing pay raises for the executive branch, the judiciary, or ourselves. We have firmly opposed putting those pay raises, particularly our own, at the top of the list of legislative priorities. We have insisted, and will continue to do so, that other people's interests are of more urgent concern, and that, in fact, every delay in addressing those more urgent priorities imposes further hardships on many of the people we represent. Our caucus met well into the evening yesterday, Mr. Speaker, and we remain unanimously committed to the position that our constituents' interest in the Alaska economy must come before our own. With respect to what we consider people's concerns, Mr. Speaker, we have not offered any bill numbers. That, too, is generally the option of the majority. We have offered general areas of activity which we feel should be addressed: tax relief, jobs, unemployment insurance, energy development programs, economic stimulus through loan programs, and a variety of other devices are available, including public works, of which the body has a long, long list. Just a few of those projects could be selected and brought to contract quickly to help out major segments of the economy. The immense power of this body, Mr. Speaker, could be employed almost immediately in a wide variety of ways to improve the lot of many Alaskans and to make our loudly heralded wealth to their advantage, work to their advantage, not just to their envy and bewilderment and further frustration. To the credit of the majority forces, we have heard just since the weekend indications of action on unemployment insurance, a hint of movement on your own Finance Committee Chairman's Resolution 33, and at least some noises about the dormant loan programs. And Mr. Speaker, we just heard here under announcements that the State Affairs Chairman is announcing hearings on the various tax relief bills that are before us. Mr. Speaker, we feel those are certainly steps in the right direction, and we are encouraged by them. And I'm sure your constituents and mine will be also. More direction and action in that, I am certain, would persuade members of our caucus that it is time for our pay raise. As of dinner time yesterday, we were not persuaded. I should point out in fairness, Mr. Speaker, that we have not been discouraged by the events of the last few days. Indications we have, ranging from telephone conversations with state employees to whom we have explained our position, to a very clear message from the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce this week, have urged us to hold the line. The controlling majorities in this legislature, as we view it, have three clear options available. They can take expeditious action on the principal concerns of the people, which have been clearly identified for you by this caucus, and in fact, have been named on your own list of priorities. They can break the pay raise question down into the separate issues it should rightfully be, and allow the members to vote conscience and conviction on the divided question, or this House can bring the omnibus pay bill to the floor, select the 21 votes needed from the majority of 25, and pass it to your own political peril and ahead of the wishes and interests of many constituents. You cannot, Mr. Speaker, further attempt to blame the minority party here for holding the pay raises. That would be truly amateurish. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Jack in the box time. Representative Anders.
Mr. Speaker, I think the minority is correct on a couple of points, but I think the fourth option is the best. Blaming the minority is probably the best option for us to take. simply because I think they are the problem, and I think the blame should rest there until they can resolve it to their satisfaction. But on the other issues that were mentioned, I think it's been pretty clearly stated that the Democrats are going to work as hard as they possibly can on issues that are of tremendous importance to our constituency. Tax relief, the variety of methods that have been put in front of the legislature, I think have to be examined pretty carefully. And you just can't outright repeal the tax law without expecting some negative responses from the federal government and even some sectors in the state of Alaska. So these are important. This is an important issue, I think, that has to be carefully examined. That doesn't mean that anybody is dragging their heels. I think the minority, with the minority yipping at our heels, there's no way that that particular problem is going to go away. And, you know, I certainly appreciate the fact that there is a vocal minority, and I think they ought to be listened to and be given every consideration when that consideration can be given. Under loans, I think, again, we're talking about a very complex area. There are people who are not getting loans that I think should be listened to, and you're going to hear my voice on that. I think the people who are capable of getting loans right now are going to be getting loans, and they're going to be guaranteed the full backing of the state's treasury in a lot of cases. But we have to look at some other problems in that area. I think it's going to take a little bit more time so that we don't leave any of our citizens behind, and I'm sure the minority won't mind waiting until a package is put together to make sure that all Alaskan residents are cared for under the loan program. The other thing is, Mr. Speaker, under workman's comp, that's another very difficult problem. I've been trying to get caught up on some of the issues revolved in workman's comp, and it's not just an Alaskan problem. It's a national issue, and a lot of things that we try to do may be counter to what the federal government is doing to us, and so we have to make sure that what we do doesn't counter what the feds are doing, and that we avoid making as many mistakes as possible. Under unemployment insurance, the minority has pointed out to us that we may have been lax in that area, but again, unemployment insurance has been looked at in the interim, and I think that the people that are on that free conference committee are not just made up of majority members, they're made up of minority members, and I think they should dedicate themselves to getting something done and should report progress, not just casting slurs and allegations against the majority. I think those kinds of statements are counterproductive and totally unnecessary. On the permanent fund, as you well know, this has been a problem that we've been faced with for about 3 years. And I think we've got very good people on those free conference committees that I think can resolve those issues. So I think we are making progress, but I think before anything is held hostage or before any allegations are directed against the majority, I think that the true picture ought to be painted, because the issues before us are very complex, and I think our members are not going to make any mistakes if they can possibly help it. And I think our members are doing a good job. And I do appreciate the comments of the minority. They are well taken, and where they make sense, I think they'll be used. And where they're totally unnecessary, I'm sure they're going to be ignored. Thank you.
Representative Meekin.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to respond under special orders.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I don't want to start a debate back and forth between the two parties represented in this discussion. I think the minority leader is correct that that they have been very productive and helpful to the best interests of the state, along with the majority, and working together. And I want to keep that relationship, which I think is better than in any previous session that I've looked at since 1972, when I was first in this legislature. But I would like to point out what I consider to be some better information than may have been inferred from the remarks of the minority leader. In regards to tax relief, before this session even started, the majority party met in an unprecedented teleconference on news press conference by teleconference statewide on tax relief and committed 23 out of 25. The only reason we didn't have 25 is we couldn't reach two people to find out what their opinions were. But everyone reached, agreed unanimously in the majority party, more than enough to pass a bill that we would address the question of tax relief and that we were committed to it. That was before the session even started. In regards to energy, the energy problems, although that's an ongoing problem and the solutions will be ongoing and require much work for the next many years to come, the very first bill that passed the entire legislature, as well as passed this body, was a bill dealing with an energy crisis and a bill that would rectify a very big problem with energy costs and energy supply in this state. So I think we have shown that we can take expeditious action, as has been requested by the minority leader. In loan programs, the first subject that was even brought up to the finance committees, before we even looked at the revenue projections, before we even looked at the budget or any of the things we normally do at the beginning of a session, before we even organized, we took up the question of the lack of loan and lack of financing in this state and passed out of the House Finance and passed out of this body a resolution, HCR 33, which would be an interim solution. We were so interested in acting quickly that we didn't wait for a bill. We passed a resolution out of this body to get something done immediately as an interim solution to the problem of financing to give us some time to do the hard nuts and bolts work on a long-term solution. That bill, that resolution passed unanimously from this body, both the minority and minority members supporting it and saying that it was a good idea. That was extremely expeditious action in that regards. In regards to jobs, something that I think we're all trying to help out the, with in this session legislature, again, before the session started, I personally discovered the problem with the CIP projects being backlogged and with the $301 million worth of loans, worth of bonds not being issued by the Department of Transportation, and created the issue in the interim, spent a lot of time on it, dug the information out, and I think all of you know that it did have a tremendous effect in getting commitments to expedite those projects so that this next construction season, all of that money is committed, at least by the commissioner, to get out, except for maybe a few projects which are hung up in court. So we've been taking action in regards to stimulation of jobs even before the session, and that's a continually ongoing a prospect. In addition to those things, we've also passed from this body the largest appropriation in the history of this state for a single item, $900 million into the permanent fund, which I think is an appropriate and prudent response to the large revenues that we see facing us, rather than the kind of accusations that we have that we might frivolously spend this money on something that would be not worthwhile. So I think it's important to note that although the minority leader is absolutely right that these problems are still pressing and we need to push ahead on them and have the night meetings that have been scheduled on tax relief and work all hours of the day and night and weekends and get the effort going and expedite these things and get them moving, I think it is fair to say that this session of the legislature is moving quicker than any other session that I've ever been associated with, and I think the minority leader must admit that although it might not be fast enough for him or for the people of the state who are suffering and need us to take action, it's as fast as we can possibly act, and it's faster than we ever have before.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the first obligation of the minority is to attempt to get to be the majority, and obviously that's part of what's going on around here. And if I were in the minority, I'll tell you what I would be doing. I would look at the people who are in responsible positions, who would go and talk to the members of the other body and then come back battered and beaten and soiled and saying, well, we got something for the people and for the House, and they're looking at our priority list, and then if I were in the minority, I would say, gee whiz, that's our priority list too. And not only that, we're going to hold up all of the things that go on between the two houses, and I'm going to, like the second reel of a popular Mel Brooks movie, kind of one step and you got a dead house.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under special orders, I'd like to speak on printing.
Representative Munson.
All the members will find another copy of the Special Committee on Roads and Highways interim report on their desk. We had them delivered to the offices, but many of the members contacted me and said their copies were upside down and backwards. So we do have a new copy for everybody. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like the floor for the purpose of talking about amateurs, professionals, and super pros.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, apparently some of the members of one of the parties in this body have reacted, I guess, a little bit less than enthusiastically to the term amateur. Actually, that's a very satisfactory and sometimes sought-after title in a lot of forums. A lot of athletes zealously protect their amateur standing. And nothing wrong with that. It's, but actually, so I thought I'd better describe what the classifications really are. There's the amateurs, and there's the professionals, and then there's the super pros. And the amateurs wear white hats. They're good guys. And the professionals wear white hats. They're good guys, too. It's the super pros that wear the black hats. You know, they have the big black cigars sticking out here and the black hats, one thing or another, and they work in the dark corners and don't tell anybody what's going on. But sometimes the amateurs inadvertently play into the hands of the super pros, and therein lies the problem. Because nothing suits the purpose of the super pros better than to get everything all snarled up, take a whole bunch of good priorities, and a whole bunch of strings tied from one to another, and then what happens? The last 2 or 3 days of the session, we're here literally, and I've seen this happen, 24 hours in a, you know, at a stretch, and we all go home boggled and wonder, you know, what it was we did. Fortunately, things are recorded now. We can come back and listen, but that didn't even used to be the case. Why? Because the amateurs, in seeking to make sure that what they thought was important and what the professionals, the people who were dealing with this thing professionally, even though they're fortunately not at this thing on a year-round basis, it's because the amateurs have taken some good projects and got them so tied up so at the last minute we have this snarl that everybody, the press, ourselves, the public, everybody recognizes is just a real mess. A certain amount of that is inevitable anyway, but we don't have to compound it. Now, we can take priorities one at a time as they become available, not tie strings to them, vote up or down as the members see merit or demerit in each issue, and at the end of the session, we'll have a record that we can all stand on. And the member from Anchorage a minute ago says if we pass certain bills first, we do so at, I think he used the word, peril. Mr. Speaker, there's no peril involved if we do a whole lot of good things. It doesn't really make any difference which, you know, the order in which we do them, as long as something proceeds on an orderly fashion. The peril comes when we tie everything together and a lot of stuff gets dropped through the cracks because there's so many side deals then made that, you know, that an awful lot of good things just don't happen. Reference was made to 25 votes. As a matter of fact, we do have 25 votes, and maybe we're going to have to scramble to get 21 out of that 25, Mr. Speaker. You know, the Democrats have done that before and not, I add, happily, at our peril. This minority, this legislature, I think, has not made public employee raises, benefits, wages, and so forth a partisan issue, and that is to both of our credits. A lot of us are hoping, have been hoping very strongly, that it will remain a nonpartisan issue. It'll remain to both of our credits. But if it's necessary, we'll scramble and we'll, you know, and I'm sure we'll, you know, eventually come up with the 21 votes.
but far better, far more responsible to the people that elect all of us if we bring the issue up and the Democrats that favor it vote yes, the Republicans that favor it vote yes, the people that on both sides that vote that don't favor it vote no, then the public has a clear perception of where everybody stands. That's the proper way to handle it. And as I say, when all is said and done, when it's all finished, it'll be the total record of this legislature that we'll be judged by. And if at the end of that record we have not done significant work on unemployment compensation, for instance, or on capital projects to stimulate the economy. Incidentally, I forgot to announce we've got a special Saturday session on that very subject in State Affairs. I'm sorry about that, gang, but we announced that yesterday in State Affairs meeting. I forgot to mention it earlier. If we have not met the nights and the weekends to accomplish these things, if we don't, you know, if we haven't done our job right, what we did with one bill, up or down, isn't going to save our political neck if that's what we're worried about. It's the total record of this legislature in this specific House that the people are going to judge us on, and it's just, we're just delaying things, snarling things, being amateurs if we don't proceed in an orderly manner as the various opportunities arise.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. All we have to do is now decide who's got the white hat, who's got the black hat, right? On another subject, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak on a resolution I introduced this morning.
Representative Randolph.
This morning I introduced what turned out to be House Joint Resolution 57, and several of you co-sponsored with me, and I want to thank you for that. It has to do with opposition to reintroduction of the draft, or at least the registration of it. There's absolutely no reason for registration other than the draft, and there's no reason for the draft other than to go to war. And the war that we're contemplating in the Middle East right now is primarily to protect our source of energy. I think that's an extremely ridiculous reason for us to be contemplating sending our young people off to war. It's been the policy of the federal government not to allow the development of fossil fuels, fossil energies, particularly in Alaska, for the last decade. This disastrous policy has caused a tremendous deterioration in the energy importation situation we have in this country. In 1971, the United States of America was importing 15% of its energy. Today, we're importing 46% of our petroleum needs. Any thinking person would have to ask themselves, why do we have a federal government policy that is rapidly making us more and more dependent on foreign energy sources, while at the very same time they're seriously considering asking us to demand that our young people and men and women go and fight and die to protect a source of energy that there's absolutely no excuse for us to be dependent on in the first place. Here in Alaska, we have huge amounts of fossil energy, which, if developed, could drastically reduce our dependency on imports. And the same government that is talking about forcing our sons and daughters to go abroad to fight in another Vietnam-type police action to control to sustain our energy sources is the same government that's continuing to sustain the policy of no energy development in Alaska and elsewhere. I think it's important we put our kids and our industry, for that matter, to work digging holes looking for oil and gas, not for graves. Admittedly, due to the government's longstanding adherence to a totally secret, bipartisan policy in foreign affairs, thereby eliminating any meaningful debate, neither I nor any of you have really got the knowledge on which to base any reasonable decision. I do know, and I think most of you do know, however, that presidents of both parties have been lying to the American public at least since Pearl Harbor. I know, of course, this is going to be an extremely emotional, controversial issue, but when the ultimate tax of life and death is involved, I, for one, am not going to sit silent. I do believe in a strong defense for this country, but we don't need subscription to ensure that. A study just completed by the Hoover Institute pointed out, and this institute was attended by 80 of the leading military experts in this country, that, and Professor William Babbitt, and I have the study, of the University of Texas School, presented a long economic legal indictment of the idea of a conscription. He concluded that the national service was both unwise and unconstitutional. David Landau of the American Civil Liberties Union pointed out the effects of forced conscription and its effect on America, the resistance of it, and its effect on this country. Experts from the Department of Defense argue that the all-volunteer forces is working well. The manpower targets have been met within 1 or 2%, and that the quality of the volunteers are essentially better than those of the draftees the last few years of the draft. Our military personnel, in my opinion, should be the best paid, best trained, most dedicated, most capable people amongst us. I strongly support the creation of a truly voluntary professional fighting force for America's defense, which would be second to none and could be second to none if we make the commitment to it and to the, really to the defense of this country instead of the far-flung forces that we have scattered around the world today. This force could totally defend the vital interests of the United States if the pay, the training, the benefits were created that would create the pride that would allow our best people of all ages. We don't have to restrict the draft to 26 or 18 to 26. The kind of warfare we're going to have nowadays, a 40 or 42 or 43 or a 50-year-old man or a woman could handle many of those chores. In a poll that was just done, the results of the poll was in favor of reinstitution of the draft. However, the group from 18 to 26 were highly in favor or proposed to it. I think all we'd have to do is extend that age limit up to 45 or 50, and I got a hunch that the whole poll would have been opposed to it. America has been a great country, and it can be again. There are millions amongst us, myself included, who will willingly and voluntarily go and fight any enemy in the defense of freedom, but who will not raise a finger to support another trumped-up police action like Vietnam, which is designed to bleed us economically, emotionally, and spiritually dry. There is no greater issue before us. America needs a strong defense, but that defense must be in support of freedom, not to destroy it. The draft is totally immoral. It's the ultimate tax. It's the ultimate violation of the natural rights of every human being to be free. And it certainly violates the intent of the founders of America, for they made no provision for it and obviously were opposed to it. With the introduction of House Joint Resolution 57, I'm urgently calling upon all freedom-loving Alaskans, the mothers and fathers who have raised lovingly their children, the grandmothers and grandfathers who have seen the futility of past wars, the surviving veterans of Korea and Vietnam who've seen the horrors, the injustice, the senselessness, and the waste of those conflicts. And above all, I'm appealing to young people from 18 to 26 who are being asked to lay their lines on the line, for what I think they really should ask is for what. I think every American, every Alaskan, ought to make it an immediate and top priority to read, to study, to think, and then to act, to rise up and oppose with all their might the reinstitution of the draft. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, may I respond very briefly?
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, it's easy to oversimplify, and it's exactly what's just heard. It's nice to refer back to Vietnam and Korea. Nobody mentions referring back to World War II. You know, it's a little different. I don't remember any major war we've ever been in when you could rely on volunteer forces. You couldn't even do it in a civil war. Mr. Speaker, nobody likes the idea of these grandmothers and these grandfathers and even parents like myself, you know. We don't like the idea of our kids being drafted and going off and being shot at. In fact, I didn't like being shot at myself. Don't think anybody knew did. But, Mr. Speaker, if this body should deal with this resolution, I hope we will give it a lot more thought than has been indicated in the previous comments.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Are there any further special orders? Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, we're in a very serious mood this morning, and I'd like to continue that mood and speak in regard to a bill that I introduced yesterday, House Bill 678 on marriages of limited duration.
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Speaker, yesterday when I introduced that bill, some of the members of the House seemed to think that, you know, it was a joke or it was, levity or was something that wasn't really serious, but I want to assure you, Mr. Speaker, and all members of the House, that that bill is a very serious bill and is in response to my constituency. And I think that all legislators should be willing and able and courageous enough to introduce legislation, even though it is controversial, when their constituency wants it. And further, the this body is a public forum, and if we want to talk about a subject here, well, we should be able to do it freely and not be intimidated by any special forces. Actually, there were some funny aspects, I suppose, of it, because the first thing I noticed in the paper was it was called Sunset Marriage, and that wasn't the intent of it at all. Somebody called it trial marriages, and that picked up real fast up in Anchorage, and I got a few calls out of there that spoiled my evening. Then someone asked me if I had any co-sponsors, and I said, not yet. I guess I still don't have any co-sponsors on it, but maybe we'll pick up some down the trail. Then one member of the House asked me this morning if this was tied into my homestead initiative, because you get 160 acres and you have so many years to work it out, and you need a wife to help you work it out, see? That was a pretty good one. And then Joyce Munson told me this morning, she says she heard it was called a rent-a-wife bill. And I asked her why it couldn't be a rent-a-husband bill. And she said, well, that was a man who said it was a rent-a-wife bill, so it figures from the source. But I want to assure you that this is really a very serious bill. That I think once that the membership gets acquainted with it, and perhaps once after we have some public hearings on it, that you'll find out that the thrust of this thing is actually to strengthen the institution of marriage and to expand the options that people have in regards to marriage. Secondly, there's a lot of people in our state here who just can't, bear the thought of an unlimited contract. That is a marriage contract that has an unlimited duration. They're either unwilling to do so, or they're unable to do so. And for whatever reason it is, we as a body should be willing and able to expand the options available to these people, so that they can enjoy the institution of marriage as well. Third, an important feature here is that there is an automatic termination to this marriage contract. And I think this is terribly important, particularly for these people who are unwilling or unable to enter into a long-term agreement. But in addition, if people don't want the automatic termination clause to go into effect, then they must renew their marriage vows. Now, our churches have for a long time have advocated that marital vows should be renewed from time to time, periodically. And this calls that question right to the floor for a vote, that are people going to renew their marriage vows, really, or are they just going to, give lip action to it? In other words, it requires a very positive action on the part of people to stay married, not a negative action, not a passive action. People respond to their peer group pressure, their family group pressure, society, money problems, and so forth, and they don't seek a divorce when actually they don't want to stay married. And yet, in truth, if a positive action is required, then they would maybe they'd take it, maybe they wouldn't, but it would certainly make the marriage a lot more interesting if it automatically dissolved unless both partners sat down and worked out a commitment periodically. And the fourth feature of this is that every marriage then under this type of an arrangement would be required to have a written premarital agreement where people would sit down and work out on a piece of paper on a form supplied by the department term of the marriage that they were entering into, and also the disposition of the assets that they brought into the marriage or that they acquired during the marriage, in such a way that there would be no argument later on. Custody of children is another problem, and that's covered under present law, so we didn't interfere with that. But I think this bill is a serious effort to expand the options of our citizens, and I'd like to see that the bill actually get, you know, have some public hearings in the near future, and I'm real serious about it, too. Thank you.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I just might ask the previous speaker if he might not get more co-sponsors on the bill if he put a retroactive clause in it.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move we adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
There's Democratic caucus immediately after adjournment. House is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.